So, Ralph wanted to talk about three men that are described here in 3 John. The first one is Gaius, and we'll talk about him a little bit. The second one is Diotrephes. Gaius receives the cordial approbation of the apostle. Diotrephes receives exactly the opposite. And then there's Demetrius, and he's just mentioned very briefly at the conclusion, but he is greeted warmly. So let's begin by thinking about these three men. First, let's turn our attention to Gaius. In verse 1, Gaius is described as a man that the apostle loves in truth. And he prays that Gaius would prosper as his soul prospers. It's an interesting prayer that the soul and its prosperity is put first. And he says, I pray that your physical health and all of the other things that go together to make up life are in accordance with what your spiritual health is. That's an interesting prayer. You wouldn't pray that unless you were pretty sure that somebody's spiritual health was a good thing. If their spiritual health was declining, if their spiritual health was in question, if they were having difficulty in their relationship with God, well, you wouldn't pray, I hope that you prosper just like you're having problems with God. But that wasn't the case with Gaius. Gaius is having a good relationship with his God, and so when John prays about Gaius' life, he says, I hope life goes as well for you physically as your spiritual life is going. So that's an interesting way to pray. We know he has a good reputation. He says in verse 3, he says, the brothers came and they testified to your truth as indeed you're walking in the truth. So the brothers came and they are with John and they're telling him about the things that Gaius is doing, and he's excited about it. Has a good reputation. And this is probably a reputation within the church. Now you realize that when the Apostle Paul wrote to Timothy about the elders, he said an elder needs to have a good relationship or a good reputation within the church, and he also needs to have a good reputation among those that are outside of the church. And sometimes it's harder to have a good reputation among people that don't know God than it is to have a good reputation among people that do know God. Why do you think that is? Why is it sometimes hard to have a good reputation among people that don't know God? Anybody? Ideas at home. Be sure to unmute before you speak up.
They don't value the same things that you do. In fact, they disavow them because it shines the light on things that they don't want people to disagree with.
Okay. And right now, we're living in a world where people seem to be pretty censorious about everything that everybody says. And so, you know, no matter what you say, somebody's going to take issue with it, it seems. But we can still have a good reputation. Any other ideas? Well, I think there's a sense in which we have to acknowledge that it's fairly easy to be on our best behavior when we're around other Christians. And sometimes we don't really behave the way that we should when we're not around Christians. You have any thoughts about that? That's not the way it should be. But I think we have to admit that sometimes that's possible. I can behave myself for a short time, even if I'm a real jerk. You know, I remember when I was dating Kim, and I would go over to her house. I could be on my best behavior when I was at her house. But once we get outside, nah, maybe not. I've known women who were dating men that everybody thought was just a peach. But when they were alone, the men that they were dating abused them. That should never happen. So Gaius, we know, has a good reputation. And in this case, this is a reputation that he has among those that are Christians. And sometimes those are the easiest people to have a good reputation with. Sometimes it's the hardest. And we'll talk about one of those times. And he says he walks in the truth. What do you think that indicates? Anybody? He's walking with Jesus. He's not just talking the talk. He's really walking the walk. And that makes a big difference. Other thoughts?
He puts on Christ.
Okay. And when I put on Christ, Wes, what does that mean that I look like?
That means obvious to especially a sinner that you are maybe a different sort of person. You might shine in that direction, kind of, so to speak. You are a Christian, obviously.
Okay. And if I'm walking the walk, that means that if you need help, I'm going to help. I'm going to be there for you. I'm not going to berate you, but I'm going to be there for you. And like Wes said, it's obvious that I'm a Christian. People will understand that I do these things because I have a belief in God. You know, and we've talked about our first responders, and we have so many medical people that are associated with this group. You know, they just extend themselves. They work extra hours. They work extra hard. They do what they do, even when other people don't do the same kinds of things, but they always do it because they're Christians, and they just do that kind of thing. They look like Jesus. And he describes his joy. He says, I have no greater joy than to learn that my children are walking in the truth. And I have to tell you, I remember when my girls were growing up, and my fervent prayer was that they would meet a guy who loved God. That was really it. And I worried about them. I'm sure every parent who has kids, that was an oxymoron. Every parent worries that about their kids. You send them off to school and you pray fervently that they have good friends and that they can acknowledge God. And when they do, it's just such a great thing. And when you get to baptize your kids, that's about as good as it gets. That's about as much fun as you can have. And I know Ted was able to baptize some of his kids. Did you baptize all of your kids? Okay, two of his kids. It's just a wonderful thing that a parent feels that way about their kids. And it probably is that John is saying, you know, you're my spiritual children. I don't think they were John's children, but they were probably his spiritual children. And you really do feel that way about them. Bible class teachers, you start thinking of the kids as if they're your kids. And that's kind of the way it ought to be. And he talks about Gaius' hospitality. Gaius' hospitality. He says, "Beloved, it's a faithful thing that you do in all your efforts for these brothers, strangers as they are, who testified of your love before the church. You do well to send them on their journey in a manner worthy of God." So Gaius apparently has been consistently involved in helping those people that were preaching the gospel. They had gone forth in the name. They're doing what they're doing to further the cause of Christ. And he says, they're strangers. You don't know them. You know, it's one thing to take in your family members when they need help. And it's another thing to take in people that you know when they need help. But Gaius is doing this for strangers that are coming through town. And he probably doesn't know these people. But nevertheless, he does what needs to be done to keep them going, get them on their way. The Apostle Paul talked about that with the Corinthians, how he was... It's a beautiful word. He says, "I was often refreshed by you." And that's what Gaius was doing. People were coming through. And this is a time, remember, when Christians are being persecuted. It's a persecution that started really in Jerusalem at the hands of Saul. And they're being persecuted. They're driven out. The record says that they went everywhere preaching the gospel. And the only people that stayed in Jerusalem were the apostles. Interesting. First people that started preaching outside of Jerusalem weren't the apostles. It was regular folks. They're persecuted in Jerusalem. And everywhere they go, they talk about God. That's why the church spread so fast in the first century, I'm convinced. And you needed people that you could rely on. This is kind of like, the best way I can describe it, it's kind of like the Underground Railroad. Folks were doing what they could to help people as they're trying to escape a very difficult situation. And these people are doing the same thing. And it was probably true that if you harbored these folks, if you took them into your home, you would be in trouble with the authorities. So it's kind of, everybody has read The Diary of Anne Frank, how there was a family that hid her family because her family was Jewish. And the Nazis were killing Jews. So when the family took in the Frank family and hid them, they did that at great personal risk. It wasn't just that they were being nice to somebody. They took a risk in doing that. And I don't know that the persecution was of that sort in the first century, but I can imagine that it was. And what's that look like today? Somebody's a stranger. They come to your school, they're brand new, and they have been talking about Jesus, and they are getting it royally in the lunchroom. Is there a risk if you go over and sit with them? It happens at work. Somebody comes in, new employee, and they're just getting a terrible time because they're acting like Christians. Would you befriend them, you know? Would you sit with them in the cafeteria? Sit with them in the break room? It involves, we're probably not going to be thrown in jail. We're probably not going to suffer the kind of persecution, at least right now. We're not going to suffer the kind of persecution that the family that hid Anne Frank's family eventually suffered. But there's a lot to be said for befriending those who are acting like Christians. Other thoughts? I don't say this for any sort of personal glory, but when Kim and I lived in Alaska for 16 years, over half the time we had somebody living with us. Sometimes that worked out, and there were times when they took advantage of us and they ripped us off. And that was difficult. And Kim sometimes worried that I was bringing home every stray dog that there was. And I think our family benefited because of it. I think Mandy and Jenny would tell you that it was a good thing. They gave up their bedroom so many times that they thought they slept together. We only had one bedroom. And he encouraged people that were preaching the gospel. We do a lot of that. This church has been incredibly supportive of people that are preaching. Most of you weren't here when I first started preaching down in Brookings. That was years ago. Longer ago than I think I want to remember. It was almost 40. Almost 50 years ago. Wow, I'm getting old. The church here helped to support me so I could preach in Brookings. And I appreciated that a great deal. And it made it possible for me to be there and to work with that group in Brookings. We've done a lot to help people that are preaching in the Philippines, people that are preaching in other places where they're going to need help. Sometimes the church is pretty small and they're just getting started. I know when I was preaching in Alaska, we really didn't have the financial wherewithal. With a pretty good sized group, but they just built a building and they were kind of cash strapped. And it's a good thing. The church in Brookings is there because some people made a decision to help. And 50 years later, that church is meeting in Brookings. And that's such a good thing. Other thoughts? Okay. Let's talk about Diotrephes. As much as everything that's said about Gaius is all positive, there's very little that's said about Diotrephes that's positive. Verses 9 through 11, this is the way that the apostle talks about Diotrephes. I've written something to the church, but Diotrephes, who likes to put himself first, does not acknowledge our authority. So when I come, or so if I come, I'll bring up what he's doing, talking wicked nonsense against us. And not content with that, he refuses to welcome the brothers and also stops those who want to and puts them out of the church. Beloved, do not imitate evil, but imitate good. Whoever does good is from God. Whoever does evil has not seen God. So let's think about Diotrephes. Diotrephes likes to put himself first. Everything about Diotrephes is me, me, me. He has to be the one. You ever know anybody like that? Yeah. Most of us would shake our heads and say, yeah, absolutely. And it's not just guys that do this, by the way. Women do it as much as guys do. Women do it in a kind of, well, most of the time we would describe it as passive aggressive. You know, they want to be the one who controls everything. They know that they're not going to stand in the pulpit and they're not going to be the teachers, but they want to control everything. And that's a sad state of affairs when you find somebody that's a self-promoter. Our only goal is to promote God. I had a good friend one time who said to me, a preacher should preach from the bottom of the baptistry. Nobody should know who that voice belongs to. Now, there's a lot of value in that. You know, understanding that you're just not that big a deal. But Diotrephes wanted to be. And because he wanted to be that big a deal, he refused to acknowledge the authority of the Apostle John. Now, let me ask you an important question. Was Diotrephes teaching something that was wrong? Was that his problem? What do you think at home? Was Diotrephes teaching something that was wrong? He might have been, but is that his biggest problem? Anybody?
He has an attitude.
Yeah, he has an attitude.
He wasn't preaching humility, that's for sure.
Well, you're right. And I couldn't figure out who that was. Was that Lee?
That was Lee.
Oh, good. Hey, my hearing is not as bad as I thought it was. Yeah. Yeah.
So
and
his example was not.
Good point. He doesn't have to be the preacher. He doesn't have to be the one that's standing up in front to have this kind of attitude. You had your hand up, Ted.
Then he follows up with verse 11 saying, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. I think that Paul is stating.
Yes.
Was he following, was he teaching people to regret? Well, teaching people not to be hospitable, not take care of those who are preaching, that's in contrast to what the apostles taught. So,
good.
Yes, he was teaching things that were incorrect.
Good point. in my experience, and this is just my experience, so that's pretty limited, most of the people that are like this deny that they're like this. Oh, I don't want to be out in front, but I want everybody to acknowledge that I'm the most important person in the room. Diotrephes is, I wish I could say that we've gotten beyond the point of having this kind of people in the church, but we haven't. They're still around. And we still have to deal with them. And they're still as destructive as they were back then. Not only does he want to be the most important person in the room, but if you don't acknowledge that he's the most important person in the room, he wants to put you out of the church. I can't imagine that someone would think that this is the way that we ought to be. And it could arise within the eldership. It can arise among teachers. It can arise among preachers. When the Apostle Paul wrote to Timothy, he said, he warned them that there will be people who will seek to draw men after them. They're drawing people to themselves. They want to be the beginning and the end. And that's just never the case. The beginning and the end is Jesus. Hebrews, of course, tells us that he is the author and finisher of our faith. He is everything. And if you have to put your name on it, maybe there's something wrong with it. You know, I was a professor, and one of the things that happens to professors is they write books, and then they want to require students to buy their books. And you usually find out that they make a lot of money when they do that. That's people who they don't quite know what they're talking about, but they want to get their name out there. Now, let me tell you about another professor that I had, a man that I was deeply impressed with, Robert Rosenthal. Robert Rosenthal, one of the best statisticians I ever met, acknowledged by everybody as one of the best statisticians that you would ever meet anywhere. He had such clout among academics that when he published a book, and he published a big book, it was a big red sucker, Rosenthal and Rosnow. Do you know he went to the publishers and he said, you cannot sell that book for more than $25. Now, I don't know if you bought textbooks recently, but textbooks like that, big, thick suckers that deal with scientific stuff, those go for $180, $200, $220. Best thing about being a professor is you can request a desk copy and you don't have to pay for it. Students have to pay for them. If you're a college student, raise your hand. Those things are expensive. Robert Rosenthal could have charged anything he wanted for that book. And he told the publishers, you cannot publish my book unless you agree that you will not sell it for more than $25. That's a man that really knows his stuff. And he doesn't need to be out in front. In fact, he used to say in class all the time, I published with Rosnow, and the best thing about it is his name comes after mine in the alphabet. So it was always Rosenthal and Rosnow. because they did it alphabetically. Yeah, I don't know. You maybe at your place of business you've encountered it. Two people do equal amounts of work on a particular project, and it comes time to present the project, and the other guy is always going to get his name first. Do you ever encounter that? I wrote a major paper, and in the world of academia, writing papers is a big deal. It's the coin of the realm. And I wrote a paper in collaboration with my faculty advisor. He's way smarter than I am. And I had done quite a bit of the work on the paper, and came time for us to submit it. I was the one that typed up the paper as it was going to be submitted. And just out of habit, I put his name first. And he sent it back to me, and he had changed it, and he put my name first. And I was always impressed with that. Always impressed with that. And that's not the way things work generally in the world of academia. I didn't have PhD after my name. He did, so his name always goes first. But he put mine first. And I think that means a lot. You know, I have to say, I've always been impressed with the elders here. They always seem a little uncomfortable when we acknowledge their leadership, particularly on Monday night prayers. And I always get the feeling that the elders seem a little uncomfortable. They take the leadership, they do what they can, but they've never tried to say, the church is prospering, we're getting through the COVID crisis, and it's because of our leadership. They give credit to everybody under the sun, and they put themselves last. And I really appreciate that about the elders here. So, Dinotrephes, his biggest problem is he has to be the smartest guy in the room. He is the one, and if you want to worship there, you're going to acknowledge that. Yeah.
He seems to have other problems too, because he won't accept what the apostles say.
You're exactly right. That's the next point. So what does that look like? He's insubordinate. John had written to the church, and he wouldn't accept what John had written. How does that play out today?
Well, it can play out in a lot of different ways. He could be leading his people astray with false teaching, or setting an example of ignoring authority and leadership.
Okay. Churches are plagued by this. Churches are plagued. And it's something that's raising its head now as we deal with COVID. The elders have to make decisions about protecting the health of a congregation. And their decisions are not easy to make. But sometimes we're just not going to get with the program. And I think that was part of Diotrephes' problem that Bob pointed out. So he's insubordinate. He's also slanderous. The King James Version says he was prating against us with malicious words. That's not the way we generally talk. we generally talk more like the translation that I was reading. And he says that he's talking wicked nonsense against us. And that's the case. I hate to say that Facebook and Twitter and all of the social media accounts that are out there are just nothing more than wicked nonsense. That's not the case. You know, we use it for a good purpose, and other people use it for a good purpose, but sometimes it's just wicked nonsense. You know that that's not what somebody meant, but you rake them over the coals because of the way that they said it. That's just wicked nonsense. And it doesn't further the discussion. It doesn't further the information that we need to make good decisions. That happens in churches too. It's just wicked nonsense. Other thoughts? Anybody else experience that kind of thing or feel that way sometimes?
Me?
Yeah.
I think that that is prevalent in the church because we have people that that's their human nature, you know, the peacock in the room. But I think the fault lies here. So we, through our lack of knowledge of the subject or our lack of knowledge about authority, God's, we allow that. So when we have a preacher, per se, or we have a member, we've experienced this in different forms. We, the people, sit back, and maybe we're happy because that preacher praises us a whole bunch, and so we like to be praised. But we sit back with our lack of knowledge, and we allow a person like that to create this monster. We have to stand for the truth. But you can't stand for the truth if you don't know it. And people who are well-spoken, you know, my wife used to give me a hard time because I'm a debater. And so she could be right, but I could convince her she was wrong. And she would walk out of that argument knowing that she should have won that argument and be frustrated. Well, she's figured me out now, so that doesn't work. But it's one of those things where we, out here in the audience, we kind of fall into that sheep role, and we just follow.
I hear what they're saying.
I can't hear what they're saying. So I think that's important to remember when you are dealing with, you know, an individual like this.
That's a good point, and well said. And can you come over to my house?
Yeah. No.
I haven't won an argument in a long time.
Yeah.
Dean?
Yeah.
It seems to me that it's wicked and nonsense is really pointing more of a finger at him because of the fact that he didn't put on Christ. And you can see that it's nonsense that he's saying he's put it on Christ, because anybody who knows Christ would say that he hasn't, and it's wicked because he's an antichrist.
Okay. Good point. Good point.
Dean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sharon and I have encountered this before in congregations that we've attended over the years, and it's not always one person. It can be a small group that bands together in little cliques, and they'll ostracize you in a hurry. We've seen that in a number of congregations, and it's really sad to see that. Also, gossipers, you know, they like to be followed, some of them, and they just can't wait to tell some juicy tale that they've heard, and expect you to just love them to death over that and follow them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you, I've been embarrassed reading accounts of people who've come down with COVID, and I thought, well, it serves you right. I should never have done that. But if your thought when you hear about something that's happened that's awful is he one of mine or one of theirs? Not the best thought. Then he's vindictive. In verse 10, the end of verse 10, he says, not content with that, he refuses to welcome the brothers and stops those who wants to, or who want to, and puts them out of the church. He's vindictive. And he says, on the other hand, imitate good. And this is what we've been saying this morning. He who does evil has not seen God. That goes without saying. We've said that all along. Let's talk a little bit, very quickly, about Demetrius. Demetrius has a good report from everybody. He has a good report from the truth. And sometimes people are good people, but they're just not doing what they ought to be doing. And he says he also has a good report from John and the rest of the apostles. So what can we say? Lessons. Christians are not always what we should be. We acknowledge that. Christians often imitate other Christians. We know that. Imitate that which is good. And that's a good thing. The Apostle Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. And sometimes we imitate bad Christians. Imitate what's good. Those who do good are of God. And those who do evil do not know God. So the question is, what kind of example are we setting? A lot to be said here. Christians can't allow the spirit of Diotrephes to rule the day. Some, and this is the point that Dean was making, Diotrephes couldn't have done what he was doing if people hadn't acquiesced. Some would not take a stand for the truth. Some would not support those who stood for the truth. If you stand up and you say, this is not the way it should be, other people are sometimes reluctant to stand with you. And again, what kind of example are we setting? Well, let's take a break.